Good morning, everyone. Very pleased to be here and to see some new faces and yet some familiar as well. I'd like to see a show of hands. How many people provide services to people with disabilities? Okay. And I want you to think, for those of you that didn't raise your hand, perhaps think of the services that you do provide and think of what you think of when you think of a person with a disability. Do you envision somebody who utilizes a wheelchair? Do you envision somebody perhaps with a mental illness who may disclose that to you or not? I'm thrilled to be here today on behalf of the disability section to really bring this to the forefront of public health and public health promotion and the services that we believe social media and that can connect people with disabilities and provide them the services that are so greatly needed. I have no disclosures to present, and I would also like to acknowledge my co-author, Mr. Thirumali. As she mentioned, I'm from the National Center on Physical Activity and Disability. We are a funded center for the centers through the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. We've been around for about 12 years, and really we started out in that kind of nuancedness of paperless. That was the great thing. We were green before green was cool. Basically, we provided information, we gathered resources, and we spent much of our time early on pulling that information together and cohesively providing in a way that we felt might be useful. But as time has progressed, and as everyone's mentioned, even children of a young age use technology successfully, we've decided that emergent technologies offer such a great opportunity to reach out to the homes and the communities of people with disabilities. So we would like to enhance the connectivity and the information sharing through this virtual community, this virtual environment. So what is social media? As you mentioned earlier, it's everybody's on it. Everybody's utilizing it. In fact, there are over 750 million Facebook users. If Facebook was a country, it would be the third largest country in the world. There are over 145 million people creating 90 million tweets a day. So if you think that this is not a great way to get the message out, I would strongly urge you to reconsider that thought. There are 2 billion views on YouTube. People spend approximately 6 hours a week on social networks for work-related issues and approximately 12 hours a week for things of a personal nature. So this is a great opportunity to reach out and provide services to people with disabilities. For us, we would like to preface that many people with disabilities experience barriers within the community. And some of those barriers include cost. What is the cost to get to a facility? What is the cost of a membership, for example? What is transportation? Many individuals have to arrange for transportation at 6 a.m. in the morning to get somewhere at 2 p.m. in the afternoon. Is there something available? When the person rolls into the fitness center, do they say, "I'm sorry, we don't have anything that you can use to do upper body exercise"? What is their lack of energy or motivation? Perhaps it's even more important that they engage in physical activity as their life progresses and as they age and live longer and live a fuller life with a disability. So we felt as though we needed to tailor these exercises to deliver a specific intervention that would provide individuals with disabilities the ability to surpass some of these barriers. Motivational resources. We felt as though just being didactic and handing out the information isn't necessarily going to be successful. And utilizing the social network, so creating that virtual community. Many times our first speaker spoke of social isolation. Many people with disabilities experience that as well. And so providing a social network, a social community to reinforce and to re-engage these behaviors is very important. As an individual enters into our 14-week program that I'll talk about today briefly, they will answer a few questions, a very low response burden, and it really assesses their ability level. So when they get their exercises, they get tailored cardiovascular, strength, flexibility, mind, body, and spirit. And what it does is it provides information directly leveled to their ability. So perhaps they might identify as someone who utilizes a wheelchair. So they will get the exercises that are appropriate for them and all the others, of course. But it makes them feel engaged. It models the behavior. It shows other individuals like them experiencing success in the venue that we want to support. So the 14-week program, we feel, is really reaching out into the communities, into the homes. Think about the people who come to your facilities, who sign up for your research. It's tough to get that in, right? It's tough to get people to maintain a program. But if you can reach out to those in their home, in their community, and provide them with exercises that they can do at no cost, little or no cost, with no equipment, you have a great opportunity to engage them as self-starters. Building social communities. Well, what the research says is that you shouldn't create your own social network. So we took that in mind, and much of the research also suggests that those programs that are embedded in theoretical models are much more successful. So are you thinking of utilizing social cognition behavior theory, or the theory of planned behavior, or perhaps the theory of change? Where is somebody at? Where are they going to gauge them? Are you meeting them where they need? The adoption of the behavior is also more likely if there's a social network to support that. And we realize that. We see that in-person workshops. We see that in social support networks. We've seen that also in the spread of what some call the contagion of the obesity epidemic. There's social norms that are acceptable. When your peers gain a little bit of weight, you're comfortable if you gain a little bit of weight, as long as you're a little bit below that social norm. Oftentimes there are studies where if a spouse loses weight, the other spouse will sometimes lose weight as a result as well. So it's really about engaging individuals, engaging them in their social networks, and promoting the types of positive self-behavior and self-change that we would like to see. The network structure can critically affect the extent to which the behavior diffuses across the population. So there's some theories out there that say that these random connections spreads it really fast. So you think about, I know when I travel, you're hearing somebody cough behind you and you're thinking, oh no, I really don't want to get sick. I have to do a presentation. Or I really don't want to have a stuffy nose when I go back to greet my kids. But you think of those things because they're so fast. Somebody touches the seat that you were at, you touch the seat, and now you may become infected. But there is also that theory of networks, that if you randomly spread out and those connections are random, that they disperse amongst people who don't know each other, and you can create behavior change more quickly. However, just in my experience over the past 16 years in providing health promotion for people with disabilities, I understand that it's a little bit more complicated to get people to buy into what we're selling. And that's really what we're doing. We're selling health promotion, exercise, eating well, and people don't want to hear that. If they wanted to hear that, there wouldn't be so many infomercials on late night TV. Basically, the theory that we think is so important is when individuals are clustered into groups and you hit them and you hit them again and you're bombarding them with the message and they're seeing the change in their cohorts, in their friends and their colleagues. So that clustered network, that they're close, they share something in common, and they're constantly being reinforced. It's a redundancy. So you can really gain that behavior change by really reestablishing and reestablishing. If someone falls off, has a bad day, eats, you know, a big takeout meal and comes back to it, they can reset. There's somewhere where you can hit them again with something that they can do and be successful at. Building social communities, what we've discovered. Users share a lot of personal information in secure and even non-secure environments. Have any of you ever watched the I think it was Dateline or CNBC gave a brief expose on Facebook and how long it takes to actually delete your account. Have you ever tried? They say that when people have some major disruption in their life, whether it's a breakup or, you know, they'll stop using Facebook cold turkey. But actually, you have to go in and delete every single photo and every single item on your account. It doesn't just go away. It's there. And in fact, we utilize Facebook and Google Ads to market to specifically our target audience that we want to engage with. So for perhaps with Google Ads, they kind of get an estimate that maybe you're a female between the age of 35 and 55, you've been searching this type of content. But with Facebook, you tell them how old you are sometimes. You identify, perhaps, if you have a disability. You identify what you like. And then, therefore, I can send marketing messages to you specifically. And it's been very successful for us. We've received about 35 to 45 clicks per day in our program through that Facebook marketing. So people do like to share information. But as I mentioned before, the research says don't rebuild it. If you build it, will they come? They won't come. But we've been experiencing something different because we identified that something was very important in our audience to be able to feel comfortable in their environment. The functional building blocks are briefly here. We'll discuss those quickly. But there's profile management. So who are you? Do you have multiple profiles? Perhaps your LinkedIn and your Facebook are different. There's a privacy. You want to engage in a certain level of privacy that creates comfort, where you don't have cyberbullying or people don't feel that they can cut you off in the lane. Or perhaps somebody's going to hold the door if you're right behind them, right? But somebody, if they're in front of the car, they might just pull out because they're anonymous. The content needs to be tailored. It needs to come from the expert and the user. And the content needs to be disseminated and also evaluated for what makes them connect, and also how do you disseminate that information, telling them. Perhaps on our program we send out information on Mondays so people know that. You can have RSS feeds as well. Friendship creation, really engaging in the social network, the relationships, the presence. Are they available? Are they online? Are they not? Can you communicate with them asynchronously or synchronous? What are the comments? Do they like you or dislike you? Do they like the video? Do they think that you need more information? That's a really great user exchange. The reputation and trust. Many times we look at the YouTube. If you have a lot of views on the video, then you know it's very popular. If you have a lot of followers when you tweet, some of that is within the reputation. Forms of communities. Self-created groups. We also know that Dunbar's rule, 150 people is about all we can manage for social networks. And so people have suggested they really want to group their friends. They want to group them into cohorts that they can identify and more easily communicate with. And it's really important for you to determine your organizational needs and your users' needs, because this is a live program. If you utilize social media right, you can be there in the home when somebody needs you. When their life changes, when their health promotion goals change, you can be there to support them. And this is somewhat of the, and I'm going to skip through this just because of time. NICPAD's 14-week program, preliminary social media statistics. 56% of our participants have filled out optional information. The About Me section, 424 characters. So they have a lot to say because, again, this is a closed community. Googlebot can't come in to our community. So when they search their name, their profile from our NICPAD's 14-week program to a healthier you will not show up. The 31% of the participants share personal contact information, their phone number. So we're able to text them and say, hey, where have you been? You didn't come back to the program for 2 weeks, and try to re-engage them. What they've demanded is more social network capabilities. We were very conservative. We wanted to really create privacy. But now we found that in our next iteration of our program, we need to engage our clients, let them be able to communicate directly, find exercise buddies in their communities, and allow them to put those friends into groups. The future research questions is there an increase in knowledge, and will this translate into behavior change? We're really not for sure. This is such a young medium to be able to promote health. We know that the ecological model of health promotion addresses many of those social determinants of health and the health inequities that many people with disabilities experience. But will this be a good medium? Who does it work for? What are the important components to include to make your program successful? And we really feel like this is a puzzle, and we hope that if everybody starts to utilize this form of media, you can reach into the community and service more individuals through public health and through health promotion. Thank you. And my acknowledgments are to my director, Jim Rimmer, Jennifer Green, who did a lot of the heavy lifting for today's presentation. You're supposed to surround yourself with people that are better, right? And various other cohorts from our center at the University of Illinois at Chicago. Thank you very much.